Hi, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day, and in today's episode, we turn our attention to one of our most popular topics, audits, and more specifically, how to manage them effectively. Joining us with Ryan's top 10 audit management tips are my colleagues, Jeffrey Shaw and Irene Belvedere, the director and senior manager, respectively, in Ryan's Client Support Services Group. Hi, Jeff and Irene. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Jim. Thank you.
And you're here to talk about audits. As I mentioned, always one of our most popular topics. But before we get into the actual audit management tips, let's talk a little bit about Ryan Tax Direct. It's a great complimentary service for Ryan clients that your team delivers, but I also think it's a great starting point for clients that might have questions or concerns about an upcoming or perhaps ongoing audit, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're here, during the whole time you're being audited, and we're a great resource to help you check in and make sure that the, you know, what auditors are saying is indeed factual or not. And we can help set your mind at ease if the auditor says, hey, you know, there's an exposure here and I'm going to assess on it. We can help you make you feel at ease that that's a good assessment. If we feel it's not, we can give you the material or backup to help you contest the auditor's assertions, and that can help you as well. So, yeah, we're the people that can really do a lot of help during the audit, and we can research things for you and give you time, which is really challenged during the audit process.
Yeah, nothing brings the urgency to a tax issue like an auditor asking about it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely.
We get a lot of calls over the years where people like, oh, the auditor's saying this, is it true? And obviously Tax Direct is a great way to find out if it really is.
Yep, definitely.
So let's talk about the top 10 audit management tips. But before we get into the actual tips, maybe Jeff, just a little bit of background on what we're trying to accomplish with those tips?
Sure. There's really two things in mind with these tips. The first one is, you know, we want to try to give you a guide as the way that you can make these audits more efficient and hopefully down the road, make them completely uneventful. So following these tips can help you get rid of all your current exposures if they exist. And so there's really nothing to find in subsequent audits. So that's kind of the utopia that we want to hit. But the other thing that we want to kind of address here is we have to keep in mind that auditors have a lot of discretionary judgment. It's really their decision at the end of the day, whether they will assess on an issue they find during the audit. And so we want to be able to tap into that discretionary judgment and find ways to really reduce or minimize the items that are assessed. And the way we do that is by following these tips, which is in a sense leading us to really work with the auditor to complete the audit. So instead of being adversarial, we're working with them to try and complete the audit. And that's kind of the two goals that we have with these audit management tips.
Yeah, and I guess it should be noted that these tips are based on years and years of experience from Ryan professionals managing audits, you know, doing audit defense work, and as you mentioned, answering clients' questions about audits on the Tax Direct line. So these aren't just made up; these are tried and true tips that are based on years and years of experience. Let's talk about the tips themselves. And I think it might surprise listeners to find out that, you know, to have a successful audit, you actually have to do quite a bit of work before the audit even starts, which brings us to tip number one, doesn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, I believe that the starting point is some sort of organizational self-evaluation. You know, take a look at the mirror and see what you've got. And by that, I mean, you know, if you've got process documentation, take a look at it and make sure that, you know, people are actually following the process. It doesn't come up in every audit, but every once in a while, auditors will want to look at process documents. And if they discover that you're actually not processing things the way you say you are in the documentation, that can lead them to think, hey, maybe something's going wrong. And so they may look at that a little bit deeper. You know, in particular, if there's process documentation for accounts payable, and they find out that the AP team is not dealing with their AP transactions as stipulated in the process documents, they may then have questions about whether you're claiming input tax credits correctly because you're not following the process. And that may just give them, you know, the impetus they need to kind of go down an area that they may not have thought they would have had to look at. So, you know, take a look at it, take a look at transactions to make sure that they're supportable both on the sales side. You know, if you're saying that the transaction is exempt or zero rated and not collecting tax, these are prime targets for assessments for failure to collect tax. Make sure that those decisions are being made correctly. The system is doing that correctly. And, you know, on the purchasing side, you're claiming input tax credits. Make sure that you're meeting the documentary requirements so that you won't have any challenges of on your ITC claims. So all those things can take up a lot of time. You know, my suggestion is, you know, maybe if your company has an internal audit group, that group may be able to help investigate some of these things. And that, you know, they're kind of independent from the rest of the organization as well. They may be able to help determine whether transactions are supportable and that sort of stuff. But that's really a good way to start off. And you can learn before the auditor comes in, maybe if you've got any particular issues that are bubbling and going to cause some excitement during the audit.
Now, tip number two is more or less an extension of that process. Irene, how important is it to review previous audit assessments?
Very. It's often, I think we like to sort of look at each audit independently and say, well, it's done, we can just forget it and put it behind us. But that's not the case. Auditors, you know, I hate to say it this way, but low-hanging fruit. So if something has been assessed in the past, often that's the first thing they want to look at. Have you addressed the issues that came up in the past? So as part of the preparing for the upcoming audit, you know, pull out the old assessment, have a look, see what issues were addressed. Have you been able to fix them or take them into account? Because as I said, the auditors often will go to that first and see if you adjusted, corrected, made those corrections. Because, you know, Jeff mentioned the discretion auditors have. I mean, if they're finding that you are making the same mistakes, well, all of a sudden they can assess a higher penalty for recurring issues because the expectation is that you are going to fix them. So you want to make sure that you don't leave them hanging. I mean, in a perfect world, you address them at the end of the prior audit, but if you hadn't, now's the opportunity. And also staff changes. So maybe the staff that was around during the previous audit is not the same staff as now. So it gives the current staff an opportunity to say, senior management, hey, let's see what's going on. What was addressed last time?
Irene, sorry to interrupt you there, but did you say there's significant penalties potentially if you've had a problem in an audit in the past and then it occurs again?
Absolutely. So the auditor, as Jeff mentioned, has a lot of discretion, so they can choose to assess a higher penalty for incurring the same sort of mistakes and errors, because the expectation, especially with large organizations, is that they're going to correct these issues, that they're not going to leave them ongoing. And sometimes their current staff, perhaps a current controller or VP of finance, they might not have been around during the last audit. So they might not even be aware of the types of issues that occurred in the past. So it gives them an opportunity to say, hey, let's look at it. Let's make sure that it has been addressed. And there may be an opportunity before the auditor steps in to make a few changes and address those things. Even in the worst case scenario, to say, hey, look, we may not have fixed them ongoing, but we're going to be adjusting them from here on in, letting them know that you are going to be addressing it. And the other thing is just knowing what was assessed gives you an idea of what they might be looking at moving forward. So it is a way of preparing for that upcoming audit to get an idea of perhaps where our challenge is going to be?
That's a very good point. And in case a listener's thinking, you know, what are the odds that an auditor is going to look at an issue we've had in the past? What would you two say the odds are?
110%.
110%.
I was just going to say, exactly.
I was going to say something around 100%. So you're saying probably even greater, if that's possible. Yeah. So obviously, I'm not a mathematician, but I'm going to say the chances are beyond very good that that's going to happen. So once the audit gets going, what are some of the other things that could be done to help ensure that the process goes smoothly? Jeff?
Well, I mean, you know, this may be still a little bit, you know, before the audit gets going, but it, you know, it's certainly going to dovetail with the start of the audit. And when you're notified that the audit is going to take place and when it's going to start, the auditor is probably going to give you a list of things that they're going to want to see. And that could be invoices, it could be access to systems, it could be a download of your computer system. And, you know, these things can all take time to put together, particularly the download from the computer system, because that may require some input from the IT group, which probably doesn't turn that around instantaneously. So you want to start working on that stuff and getting whatever the auditor has requested initially in place, so that on the day that they start, it's ready for them to work, and or ready for them to work on. And the reason why that's important is, you know, first of all, we want the auditor to be busy all the time and get in and out as quickly as possible. They can't do that if the data is not available. There's nothing more frustrating to an auditor to come in on day one and there's absolutely nothing to look at, because now they have to sit around waiting for stuff to come through. If there's one way to kind of burn the bridge with the auditor at the start is not have any data for them to work on. And you're probably going to guarantee that you're not going to get any opportunity to access that discretionary judgment. So get as much together as you can at the start. You know, there may be stuff that you can't for whatever reason. When the auditor comes in, let them know what you've got, what you can't. But, you know, the stuff that you don't have available, try to set some timelines on when that will be available. The auditor can then kind of work around whatever shortcomings that you have in that area. And I think they'll appreciate you being honest with them where you stand with the documents that they've requested.
And that includes electronic data as well, right, Jeff?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you've got your invoices and source documents scanned, for example, and so they're all electronic, yeah, make sure that that's all available. Make sure that you can access the stuff, right? You know, we come across situations where in the middle of a period that's being audited, you may have changed systems. Nothing worse than, okay, you can get access to the documents in the new system, but you can't get access to the old ones because maybe you've gotten rid of a piece of software, or maybe the two different softwares are incompatible. So, you know, make sure that there aren't any issues in terms of access to the information as well.
Okay, so if we've got all the materials assembled and ready for the auditor, let's call that tip number three. What's tip number four, Irene?
Tip number four is assigning an audit liaison. And organizations sometimes don't even think about this. And they think, what's an audit liaison? Why do we need something? Well, really what you want to do is identify one person who is going to be the funnel that's going to be dealing with the auditor. Everything will funnel through that person. You'd like to find someone who has a good understanding of the business. They don't necessarily have to be the VP of finance or the controller or the director, just someone who's got a good understanding of the business and also a good understanding of who to go to get whatever information the auditor is looking for. Who do I go to an AR? Who do I go to an AP? So they make the process easier. You don't want the auditor running around asking various people, because then you can't even control what's being provided to the auditor. We always say, don't give them more than what they ask for. So that's part of the role of the liaison. They get the information, they take the request from the auditor, and then they go to the appropriate person or department to get that information for them. That also gives them an opportunity to be the one person who knows what the auditor is focusing on. They can document what the auditor's asked, what has been given back to the auditor, when they gave it to the auditor, and also they have an understanding of how the audit is progressing, right? Otherwise, the auditor is going to various people, and there's no one person who has an understanding of what's going on. You know, what's the auditor looking at now? So it really is extremely important to find one person to dedicate. You know, it, people say, well, it's a lot of work. You know,
I was just going to say, yeah, it does seem like a lot of work. I mean, does it have to be one person, or can you get them some help?
Well, as I said before, they should be the point person. They do not have to be the person who actually does the work. They just need to know who to go to get that, so they can get another department to do the work. It's just, as I said, more the point person, so that it's not as big a responsibility for them. Their responsibility is more to just keep track of how the audit is going, more so than anything else. You know, as I said, it's, you know, you just don't want the auditor going around, because most people don't really know how a very innocent comment to an auditor could lead them down a path that could cause huge problems, or cause them to look at something that really wasn't relevant. So that one point person is crucial to keep it contained, shall we say.
It sounds like a very important role, somebody acting as a conduit for all the information going to the auditor. So I guess you need to think carefully about who you select for that role.
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, it doesn't have to be the most senior person. It can be, but often the most senior person is busy with other things. And you don't want it to be, you know, a part-time person, because then they're not there all the time. And you want someone who has an understanding of the business, but who isn't sort of afraid of an auditor. Right? Because auditors can be very intimidating. You don't want someone who's going to go, but you also don't want someone who already has a negative feeling right at the beginning. Oh my gosh, the auditor's coming in. I don't want to talk to them. They're going to bother me. Because then you're going to set off a bad vibe. It's not professional. And, you know, I've said to clients, both at Ryan and in previous experience, that, look, making the auditor miserable is not going to make the audit go better. Right? They are people, they are doing their jobs. If you treat them with respect and appreciate the fact that they have to do their job, and you cannot avoid an audit during the course of you know, your entire work experience, you can't say, well, I never ever want to be audited. So it's just part of business. And so you don't want someone who's negative, who's going to give the auditor a hard time, because that just is not going to bode well.
That's right. You heard it here. Government auditors are people too. Thanks, Irene. And your point's well taken, particularly about, you know, not making the auditor miserable. And I think, Jeff, you've got another tip about, you know, communicating with the auditor and doing it in an appropriate way.
Yeah, no, definitely. We encourage all of our clients at the start of the audit to set a positive tone. You know, The auditor's never going to become your best friend. But, you know, like I said, we want to tap into that discretionary judgment. So, you know, you want to welcome them, let them know that you'll do whatever it takes to get them the information they need and to help them progress through the audit. I know often we hear clients say, well, you know, this is a real rotten time for the audit. And if it is, then try and have the date rescheduled. You can do that. But once you've agreed to a date and they come in, don't harp on how this is an awful time for it, because you've already agreed to the time. The auditor doesn't want to hear that. That just makes them feel unwanted. So, you know, you want to set a positive tone, business-like. I like to say, you know, treat the auditor like you would your best customer or your best supplier. You know, you want this to be a good experience. You know, you got to put some friendliness into the game. And, you know, like we've said, you know, you don't want to make them not want to go, but you certainly want to make them feel welcome and not as if they're intruding on everything, even though they really are. The auditors already know that, but if you can make them feel welcome, it can make the whole thing go a lot more smoother and hopefully quicker. Get them, you know, the quicker we can get them in and out, the less opportunity the auditor has of finding some ticking time bomb that may be sitting there ready for an assessment.
Great point, Jeff. And I would suggest it's also the humane thing to do, right?
Yep, definitely.
Now, I know from working with clients in the past that stonewalling an auditor is not an effective strategy. And in fact, I think we recommend quite the opposite approach when responding to auditor requests, don't we, Irene?
Yes, we do. Clients often call and say, the auditor's asking for this. Do I have to give it to them? Usually, you know, we always say, yes, it is in your best interest to get them what they're looking for. Because, you know, so you have to make a commitment that you are going to provide them the information they are looking for. It goes to some of the things we've already spoken to. I mean, Jeff's comment about a positive tone about the audit, being professional. If you don't provide them with information, they're just going to come to their own conclusions, which could be worse than what they would have concluded if you provided the information. They're going to make decisions based on whatever little or no information you provide them. So that's not something we want. You want to be committed. If an auditor is asking for something, then commit to getting them that information. What you can do is not only commit to getting the information, but come up with a timeline. Jeff referred to this earlier at the start of the audit, but you want to say, okay, if they're looking for that, give them a deadline. I'm going to get it to you in 5 days, 6 days, 10 days, whatever it happens to be, because they will appreciate knowing when to expect it, as opposed to they've just told you what they want and they have no idea when it's going to come. If you tell them 6 days and you get it to them in 4 days, well, they're going to be happier and it's going to continue with that positive tone and make the auditor realize that you are working with them as opposed to against them. So it is important. We have to sort of accept that they're going to want information and we're going to have to respond to them. Often there's a lot of confusion because they'll say, well, they're auditing this company, but why do they need all of that? Well, because there might be a related, there might be some issues in there. And the reality is a sales tax audit or any audit could morph into another audit. We can't hide things from them hoping that, well, if I only give them this, they're not going to look at income tax or they're not going to look at payroll. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. So it's really just to keep the audit running smoothly, provide them the information they want. If there's an issue with getting it, then have that conversation with them and see if you can adjust the timeline as Jeff referred to earlier. Maybe you'll need more time. Maybe they want one thing that you can't get them today or you can't get them right away. See what else they might want. Get them that secondary information and then come up with a timeline that works to get them the first piece of information they were looking for.
That's good advice. I know we've all seen clients, you know, facing 7- and 8-figure assessments where, you know, they failed to get the auditor the requested information and sort of left them to make do with what was available. And the frustrated auditor, you know, levies this huge assessment and says, okay, well, if you disagree, you know, go ahead and challenge it. Far more work than providing the information in the first place. Now, when it comes to audits, yeah, when it comes to audits, you know, no news is not necessarily good news, is it, Jeff?
No,
which brings us to tip number 7.
Yeah, you know, I guess the worst part about audits I have is when the auditor kind of disappears and keeps to himself, because I keep thinking, oh, there's something bubbling. And so, you know, tip number 7 is meeting regularly with the auditor. You know, I don't know what that is. It's going to be different for everyone, but, you know, I think at a minimum, you need to have weekly meetings with the auditor, and maybe more than that at the start. And so my recommendation is that, you know, on the day you meet with the auditor, the first day that he or she comes in, is that you work out a time to set up for a meeting throughout the audit period. And then you actually book those meetings in. The liaison is going to be busy and they're going to be doing their regular work. And so it may be difficult for them to schedule a meeting and on an ad hoc basis. If you have this time blocked off, then you can regularly meet with the auditor. If there's no issues to discuss, you can agree to cancel it, but you know, it's better to have that set up. And then why do you need to meet? Well, it's a way to have discussions about issues. It's a way to find out how the audit is progressing, what the issues are, because you might not know. It's a way to, it provides a form to provide more information. It provides you an opportunity to have discussions about maybe issues that the auditors found and start to get some feedback from them about how you've gone off the rails. So this is all really, really good information and time well spent. And you don't want to kind of, squeeze the auditor in for a meeting. Again, that's not making the auditor feel like they're important. If you have to squeeze it in, if you've got them already lined up and booked, then the time's already available and you don't have to worry about missing other things and other obligations. And like I said, you can really set it up when you want to do it. Maybe a couple times a week at the start when things are getting going to make sure that everything is moving in place, and then maybe move to weekly. And you may find as the audit moves on, you don't need nearly as many meetings, but it's always good to have them booked and ready to go, so that you can help keep this thing moving forward. And that in itself will help you tap into the discretionary judgment that the auditor has.
So meeting regularly, help you avoid surprises, potentially avoid roadblocks. Sounds like great advice. Sooner or later, though, probably an issue is going to come up. What's your advice at that point when you have an audit issue to deal with?
Yeah, there's definitely going to be issues. You're definitely at some point in time going to disagree with what the auditor says, and how you behave during those disagreements is critical. I like to think that, hey, you're not going to resolve every issue. At some point in time, what you might have to do is agree to disagree and put it aside. And that's fine, right? We move on to something else that you think you can settle. You can always come back and talk about that, get more information, get support from maybe advisors at Ryan to help you have a better discussion with the auditor. So that's important. When you do get into discussions on issues and you get into disagreement, I think the important thing is, to be truthful. Don't elaborate. Don't add things. Don't kind of fabricate stuff. Be honest with them. Integrity is key at this point in time, because they'll lose respect for you if you try and twist the story. So take that as an opportunity to lay out your cards on that issue out on the table, and be factual. And take it as a learning opportunity as well. Learn about what the auditor's position is, and try and get information from the auditor to support their position, so that you can verify it. You can use that information to maybe correct things down the road if you have to. This is all important information to help minimize the impact of the audit on future audits, which can be beneficial. The other thing is to try and resolve any issues that you have during the audit. Like I said, the goal is to try and take advantage of the discretionary judgment the auditor has. If an auditor doesn't feel really strong about a particular issue, they may decide not to assess on it. That's the type of decisions you want the auditor to make with issues that you have of this nature. And keep in mind that, when you're having these discussions, you may feel really confident about one and get the sense that the auditor doesn't feel confident about it. And you may know there's other issues that you don't feel strongly about that the auditor probably does. You may be able to do some horse trading. You know, you might be able to say, hey, I'll tell you what, I'll give you this issue because you feel fairly confident about it. But this one over here, you sound a little bit wishy-washy on it. Make that one go away and I'll give you this one. And so you may be able to move things along because of that. So don't hesitate to negotiate during this time. And you know, the real reason is that sure, you can say, fine, I'm not dealing with that issue. We'll just object when you assess on it. That is an approach, but if you're going to object, you know, there's timelines that you need to meet that could be challenging. And then that just adds a whole new dimension. I mean, the issue is going on longer than you want. You may have to bring in lawyers and accountants to help you with the objection, which may add cost, and there just be additional time. So we want to try to avoid that as much as possible. At the end of the day, you may have to go that route, but try and clear up as much as you can while the audit's going on, because that's the best time.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jeff. It really can cost a lot more to resolve some of these issues after they're on an assessment. And your earlier point is also well taken. You know, if you don't communicate well throughout the audit, and an auditor sort of becomes entrenched in their position before you have a chance to address it, it's just that much harder to challenge, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, once they've made a decision, like anyone else, right? Once you've come to some conclusions, it's really hard to convince you otherwise, unless they, you know, their logic was flawed because they misread a piece of legislation or something like that. If they've made a decision and they've come to some conclusion, it can be really hard to move them off of that conclusion.
So while some of these tips do seem like a little bit of extra work for the taxpayer, the truth is it's a good investment because it can save you more work overall. I guess even once the assessment's finalized, you know, the work doesn't stop there, does it, Irene?
No, it doesn't. So I started off, one of the first things I said was reviewing a prior notice of assessment. Well, when you get your current notice of assessment, you need to review it in detail. I mentioned we're all human, auditors are human, mistakes can be made. Now, what shows up on the assessment should not be a surprise. The issues. You may be surprised by the amount of the assessment, but the issues that are addressed should not be a surprise, because hopefully if you followed all our other top 10 tips, then you know what's going on. You know what the auditor, what the issues are, you know what they're going to assess on. So reviewing the notice of assessment gives you an opportunity to do a cross-check. Okay, these are the four issues that I know they're going to assess. Are those the four that we've been assessed on? Or did something come up that you were you weren't expecting? That now's the opportunity to have that conversation. Is it a mistake? Or is it something you weren't aware of? You can still ask questions of the auditor, even though you've received your assessment, to get an understanding of what the issue is and why you've been assessed. And that'll help you moving forward. And then, you want to make sure there are no errors. You know, sometimes there are errors. Something gets keyed in twice, or perhaps a sample came up as an error under two different issues. And instead of only capturing it once, they captured it twice. So all of a sudden, the amount that you've been assessed is higher because something's been included more than once. So you want to make sure that you check for those kinds of things. See if you can do an estimate of the interest, just to make sure it's been calculated properly. Interest rates are rising, so the interest component is getting bigger. You want to make sure that you're not incorrectly being assessed an interest amount that was an error that perhaps we can check. And I think the key is, to make sure you understand that, as I said, there's no surprises and you understand what they're explaining. In my time at Ryan, this is the time when clients sometimes call us and say, I've been assessed. They explained the issue or they told me what the issue is, but I do not understand it. So that's a great time to call us. Jeff mentioned it before. We can help you understand it, point you to legislation or maybe some other information that'll help you understand moving forward, which is important because it's hard to fix something if you don't understand why it's wrong in the first place.
Yes, it is a good time to call us. A better time might be before the item's already been assessed.
True.
Earlier is always better, because we can help more. And as Jeff mentioned, things are just less difficult if it's not already on the assessment. That said, I guess we should point out that if it's a really clear, obvious error, sometimes you can get that removed, even though the assessment's already been issued. For something very simplistic, like something being double counted or interest miscalculation, sometimes they will fix those things after the fact without having to do a notice of objection. So really good point there. Now, Jeff, I promised everybody a top 10 list. So that was tip number 9, was reviewing assessments in detail. What's tip number 10?
Well, the audit's done. You've got the assessment. You're happy, not happy. I don't know. It all depends. You're still not done. You've got an assessment. I don't know that I've ever heard of a situation where a client gets audited and there is no assessment. So you're likely going to get some sort of assessment. You've got a list of things that haven't been handled properly by your organization. And so you need to look at that list and fix them. Make sure that they work properly. You may also look at that list as well and decide whether you're going to file a notice of objection to contest a particular issue. But, let's kind of put that aside. We've got these issues. Now we want to fix them. Because here's where we really get the benefits of the top 10 list. If we fix them going forward, when the auditor comes in again later on, they won't be issues. And so there will be nothing for the auditor potentially to look at. Probably far-fetched because businesses change. And so maybe new things are created because of those changes. But at least those things that you knew were an issue in this audit will not be an issue going forward. And don't forget the things that I talked about a few minutes ago, where maybe you've negotiated to have something removed. You still don't, if you've negotiated to have something removed, you still don't know if your position is correct on that. So it could become an issue going forward. So you want to look at those as well. Maybe contact your advisors at Ryan to say, hey, do we have this right? We managed to get it off the audit this time, but maybe we won't the next time. Call us. We can make a determination of whether you're handling it right or not. And so if we think maybe you're not, now's the time to fix that. So it won't be an issue going forward the next time, because you might not be so fortunate the next time to have the auditor erase that from a potential assessment. And then the other area that I think is important is educating other people in the organization about what happened, what issues were found. That could be senior management, but I think more importantly, educate the people in the finance team that are kind of integral to the audit process and the results that the auditor is looking at, and provide them training. Get them better understanding of how sales tax works, because your best line of defense on a lot of audit issues is your own staff. If they know what the issue is, if they see something is going wrong, they can be waving the white flag going, hey, we got an issue here. Remember this came up in the last audit. We got to fix this. We got to address it. They might not be the ones that can fix it themselves, but they can certainly tell you in advance that there's a problem that needs to be addressed. And again, that's instead of having one person like the liaison having to deal with it, now you've got the whole accounting team, the whole finance team helping you make sure there aren't tax issues. And they can't do it if they don't understand how the tax works and functions.
That's practical advice. Great information today. Let's quickly review Ryan's top 10 audit management tips, starting with number 1.
Organizational self-evaluation. Take a look at what you're doing, how you're doing it, and whether you're following the rules that you set in place to handle those transactions.
Number 2.
Number 2, review previous audit assessments. So have a look at previous assessments and make sure that you've corrected all the assessments that are all the errors, excuse me, that were identified in previous audits.
Number three.
Make documents and data available on the audit start date. Now, this is important so that the auditor is ready to go and start working on the audit on day one and not sitting around waiting for material and thinking of ways that they can get at you and raise an assessment.
Number four.
Find an audit liaison. Determine who's going to be the one person who's going to coordinate all the information between the auditor and the organization. This is crucial to the success of the audit.
Number five.
Set a positive tone. Make the auditor feel welcome and let them know that you're going to do everything possible to help the audit run smoothly.
Number six.
Committed response to auditor queries. Continue on with that positive note and make a commitment to provide all the information that the auditor has requested.
Number seven.
Meet regularly with the auditor. It's important to have meetings regularly scheduled so that you can keep on top of the progress of the audit and find out if more information is needed to help move the audit along.
Number eight.
Resolve issues before the assessment is finalized. This is kind of one of the key goals we have is to tap into the auditor's discretionary judgment. So if we can resolve them during the audit, we may be able to tap into that discretionary judgment, and that in itself can help the audit move around along quicker.
Number nine.
Review notice of assessment in detail. So you should be reviewing the notice of assessment thoroughly, and just to ensure that there are no surprises of what you've been assessed and or there are no obvious errors that were perhaps made.
And number 10.
Take corrective action for any issues identified. In addition to that, take corrective action or at least investigate issues that were disputed but maybe not assessed on. And this is where you really, really gain the benefits from the top 10 tips, because if you correct everything that was identified as an issue during the audit, they won't be issues going forward. And that in itself can save you negligence penalties, which can add to significant cost to future audits.
And these tips are also available along with a lot of other useful audit management information in Ryan's Guide to Managing Sales Tax Audits. To find out how to get your free copy, you can contact your Ryan representative, or like most things, Ryan, you can always start by contacting the Ryan Tax Direct line at 1-800-667-1600 or taxdirect@ryan.com. We'll also post these tips on our website at ryan.com/Canada and look under our News and Insights page for that article. Jeff and Irene, that's a lot of great information today. Thank you for taking the time to share it with us.
Anytime, Jim. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
That concludes this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. Please let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.